You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Hands it off to CJ Gable, who scores the first touchdown of the game. And the Hamilton Tiger Cats riding some momentum from the win 5 days ago at home against Toronto.
Okay.
Come out firing here tonight. To punch it home here. Will they? Looks like they will. Touchdown. CJ Gable now has a pair, finishing off impressive drives from the Hamilton Tiger Cats. For the Ottawa Red Blacks and the Hamilton Tiger Cats have two straight wins under their head coach. A coaching change, a quarterback change, and so far it's working for the Cats.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Well, Mike, what do we have here, sir? I think we call this a winning streak, no?
Well, it's yes, two games in a row, Josh. How does that make you feel?
Oh, it makes me feel pretty good. It makes coming in to do this every week a little bit more enjoyable. It means we don't have to talk about the same crap over and over again like we did for the first eight games of the season. But that was a heart-stopping win, but it was a win nonetheless as the Ticats down the Red Blacks in a game I gave them absolutely no chance of winning a week ago. I even went on Twitter like 2 minutes before kickoff and was like, this game will be over by halftime. And the halftime score was 23-7 Ticats, and I was shocked. I'll be honest. I did not think they had a hope in hell winning this game. The rest, the late Monday game, all that stuff, Ottawa winning three in a row, going on the road. I thought this was going to be a butt-kicking for the Red Blacks, and the Ticats get out to that 27-3 lead at half and hold on to win 26-22. So I know this sounds kind of crazy and would have made us all look nuts just a couple of weeks ago, but the Ticats, the 2-8 now, Hamilton Tiger Cats, who were winless at this time last week, are right back in the thick of the playoff race in this very bad East Division, but I don't really care how bad the division is, Mike. I'm sure you agree with me on this. The Ticats are still in this thing, and they are suddenly the hottest team in the East, and it makes me ask you these two simple questions. Can these guys actually do this? Can this team really make the playoffs, Mike?
It's still a bit of a long shot because they have to tie so many wins together, but I'm not giving up. I think if this team keeps playing the way they're playing, they need to be a little bit more consistent in offensively especially, but the defense has really stepped up. So, you know, if they can string some wins together, some more wins together, maybe, you know, two or three more, we're right back in it because Montreal looks like crap right now. Toronto doesn't look that great. And we just beat the best team in the East. So, yes, I do believe we still have a shot at this.
All right, Mike, since it's a lot more fun, and I would also say a lot easier, to talk about the team after a win, let's get right into the offensive side of the ball. How do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? Who do you want to talk about on this offense?
Well, I want to talk about Jeremiah Mazzoli to start with. I mean, this guy came out, I believe he completed his first 11 passes or something to that nature. Just a great first half of football for him. Just spectacular. And then in the second half, it kind of fell off. You know, we scored 23 points in the first half, three in the second half. So I'm really impressed with him, but he just needs to be more consistent. That's been his problem all, you know, throughout his whole career. You look at his numbers and they're not that great passing, you know, only 54% through the air, 17-31, 231 yards. But then you look at a different dynamic he brings with the rushing. 7 carries for 73 yards. Now that's impressive right there. And that probably made the difference points-wise for this team.
Yeah, he definitely extended plays with his feet. He was that dual threat quarterback that we know he is. And you brought up rushing, and it would be remiss. I'm surprised you didn't start with this. But the Hamilton Tiger Cats had a rushing attack in this game, Mike. I know a few of Mazzoli's carries were scrambles, but there were a few design runs. In total, this team ran the ball 18 times. CJ Gable had 11 rushes for 74 yards and two touchdowns. Mike, it's almost like the things that we've been talking about for 3 years finally happened in this game. And I know 11 carries is not a lot of yards or a lot of carries. Like, that's not a lot of work for a running back on most teams. But for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, that's like giving them 30 carries.
Yeah, this is true. And I haven't seen C.J. Gable run like that for a long time. He just looked very, very motivated. He was running hard, especially on that one touchdown. He was hit probably at the one, and he just muscled his way into the end zone. So that was great to see that this guy can still play the game at a very high level.
Yeah, it was when he scored the first touchdown, and then he had a couple big runs, it was like, it's nice to see more balance to the offense, and maybe this is the June Jones effect. Maybe he wants to get the running game a little bit more involved. He did say in his post-game scrum that he wanted to script runs for Mazzoli, which he doesn't like to do, but he wants Mazzoli to feel like he can go out there and make those plays. You look at the numbers rushing, Gable 74, Mazzoli 73. This team ran for nearly 150 yards. I can't tell you the last time a Ticats team had almost 150 yards rushing in a game.
I know, it's really good to see. And another good thing from the offense was the offensive line, I thought. I thought they had a great game protecting Mazzoli and opening up holes for Gable. I thought they were just spectacular that game.
Yeah, Gable had some big holes to run through. And I think the Red Blacks only had one sack in the game. And yes, yeah. there were some plays where Mazzoli had to run around. And yeah, we mentioned some scrambles, so they did get a few quarterback pressures. But all in all, I think this is the unit. And I mentioned this in my postgame piece on Three Down Nation. We knew that the interior three guys were pretty good. At the very least, we've been giving them a pass on how bad the offensive line has performed. But now with Tony Washington on the left side and this Riker Matthews kid on the right side, I don't know. It sort of feels like we found that five-man unit. We know Filer and Bombin and Revenberg, we know what they can be, and now we know Tony Washington was great with the Edmonton Eskimos. He's now back in his more familiar left tackle spot. Riker Matthews came in on Labor Day as a late replacement, and yeah, he had he's a young kid, he's going to make plays. He was the guy that got burned, I think we talked about it last week, on the fumble, non-fumble hit on Jeremiah Mazzoli. But for the most part, we haven't noticed the offensive line the last two games with these five guys in there. And that, to me, that's the positive about this, is we're not talking about them, because when we talk about them, you should talk about them because they screw up, right? And we're not seeing that. We're seeing some pretty decent line play. These might be the five guys we have going forward.
Yeah, I hope they stick with them, get some continuity there. You know that there's going to be the four there for sure, three inside and Tony Washington on the left side. But I just hope they stick with this new kid because, you know, he got his chance and he's made good with it. So yeah, let's keep these guys together and keep it rolling.
Yeah, I've again, you never know if you have a player until you let him play. And this Matthews kid, I've liked what I've seen. It's hard, again, and we've discussed this. We're in the 87th episode of this show. We've probably discussed it on 80 of them or when however many games we've reviewed. It's hard to judge offensive line play when you're watching a game live. But again, like I said, we're not talking about them. Like, it's not the first point we bring up. Oh, my God, the quarterback got sacked seven times or he was running for his life. That to me is a step in the right direction. It's a positive step. And it's something I'm looking forward to seeing this unit continue to grow together. And like I said, maybe we found these five guys. Maybe we have our offensive line.
Hopefully going forward, we do. And look at the receivers. Another good game from Brandon Banks as a receiver. He only had three catches, but 54 yards, an 18-yard average, really good average. And Jalen Saunders had a great game as well, four catches, 88 yards, and a 22-yard average with a long of 32. So, and Tasker was in there as well with five catches for 46 yards. So, you know, these guys are a couple young – well, Jalen Saunders, a young guy, comes in, and he's been playing well pretty much all season. I've been impressed with him. And Brandon Banks, once again, I think that – he is going to be a key part of this offense going forward, and he's making plays out there.
Yeah, and let's not forget that he drew that big pass interference call
right. That
set up the Ticats for, I believe, it ended up being a field goal, but it might have even been a touchdown. I'm trying to remember now. I'm going to look through the stats just to make sure that I'm not wrong, but he drew a key pass interference call that set up a score for the Ticats, and that's big. Like, that's the type of stuff. If I believe the Tigers had to challenge as well, so it's like that's the type of thing that you when you challenge a play and get points off of it, that's a good thing. So I think Brandon Banks is starting to become a pretty decent receiver.
Yeah, he's really stretching the field, and that helps out the other receivers, right? So I think it was a brilliant move by June Jones to take him off of the returns and put him as a full-time receiver. You know, we might not have said that a couple of weeks ago, but it seems to be paying off well. And Altman wasn't bad in the return game. So, yeah, it looks like a pretty good decision by June Jones.
Yeah, I just checked. The Jones challenged, and it ended up being the drive ended with Gable's second touchdown run of the night. So that makes it even bigger than challenging any field goal. If you're going to use a challenge, of which we should note, June Jones has challenged now once in each game. He's got them both right. So he knows when and where to challenge, and that's that provided a big spark. They kept the drive going, and they punched into the end zone in a 4-point game. It was a very good challenge by Jones, and it ended up paying off. Good job for everyone on that one.
Yeah, and now I just like to touch on the lack of production by the offense in the second half. This is a little worrisome. They have to be more consistent. It seems like a lot of time this year there's been two quarters where the team just doesn't put up any points. Now, that didn't happen this game. They put up three in the third and nothing in the fourth. But if this team wants to go on a serious run, they're going to have to be more consistent and put up more points more consistently throughout the game, because you can't go a half with only scoring 3 points.
No, you're absolutely right. If they did not jump out to that huge lead, this game would have gone decidedly against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. But I'm glad you bring it up, because even in a victory, a second straight win, we do have to touch on the negative stuff, and that the lack of production in the second half, lots of two and outs, lots of stalled drives. That you're right. A team is not going to be successful over the long period of time if they disappear for a quarter and a half or two quarters at a time, and that's what the Tiger Cats did. Luckily for them, they had a defense that played kind of out of its mind, easily the best performance defense has played all year. And they got enough production in the first half to buttress them against losing it in the second. So again, it's like you got to give them their credit for playing well, but you also kind of got to give them a little bit of the business, because they didn't play a full game.
They did not, but I think this is a good time to transition into the defense. What did you see? What did you like? What did you not like?
Well, to me, this game, defensively at least, and maybe the game as a whole, kind of had the tone set on the very first play of the game, that opening play from Ottawa, which was just idiotic. They ran this like a double reverse wide receiver pass option, and it was snuffed out by Larry Dean for a 10-yard loss, and it was an awful call, but it kind of set the tone for what the Ticats were going to do defensively. They were going to get after the ball carrier. They're going to get after the quarterback. They were going to make life miserable for the Ottawa offense. And it started from the first play and kind of just went from there. And I got some numbers for you, Mike. And usually when we're talking about numbers in the Ticats defense this year, we're talking about terrible numbers. But how does this sound to you? On second down, the Red Blacks averaged just 3.3 yards on second down. This team took just three penalties for 36 yards in the game. All three were on defense. One of them was the questionable pass interference call on Emmanuel Davis, but that's neither here nor there. Just three penalties, incredible. Four sacks. Ottawa was only 42% on second down. And this, to me, is the big one. No receiver for Ottawa went over 100 yards, and they held Greg Ellingson, the league's top receiver and a legitimate most outstanding player candidate, to just four catches for 47 yards. Mike, that's a stud performance by the defense.
Absolutely. And the secondary was phenomenal. Guys up front, the defensive tackles were great. You know, they had pressure all game long, it seemed. The linebackers were flying around. Simone Lawrence, you know, you noticed him this game. He was making a difference. You know, Larry Dean, of course, was making some plays out there. It's a shame that it seems like, you know, this defensive team is coming together and might actually be really good, and we're 10 games into the season. So a little late on that front, but, you know, we'll take it. You know, whatever we can get right now, we'll take it. But too bad it wasn't a little earlier in the season that all these, you know, the offensive lines gelling together, and the quarterback's playing well, and the receivers and the defense is playing well. Too bad this couldn't have happened a little bit earlier, but I'll take it right now.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I gave you numbers. Now I want to talk about players, Mike. I have a very long list of players that I was super impressed with this game. We're going to start on the, we're going to go from the line and we're going to move backwards. We're going to start with Davin Coleman. This guy, he started to become the QB killer, man. And we have to say, and I'm sure you agree with me, you never want to see players get hurt. And Trevor Harris leaving the game with a shoulder injury, you want to see the best players out there, and we're not advocating players getting hurt. But Davin Coleman hits these guys, and he's done it all year. He did it to Harris in this game. He knocked Jonathan Jennings out of a game. He hit Mike Riley. He's hit Ricky Ray. Like, he is developing a reputation as a quarterback killer, and they're all clean hits. He's not headshotting people. He's not going low. He's just playing physical, physical football, and that's what you want. And again, the byproduct of that, unfortunately, has been he's taken two quarterbacks out of games that have suffered long-term injuries. But you can't fault the guy. He's just going out there playing hard, and he was awesome in this one once again.
He was. He was. And a guy that I'd never really heard of that came out of nowhere was Nikita Whitlock.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought him up. Yeah. So glad you brought him up. I'm calling him the human Swiss Army knife because I saw him in this game. He played some end, he played some tackle, he dropped back into coverage. You just mentioned two sacks, three total tackles. He's kind of this little ball of hate. And I remember when he played in the National Football League, he was a fullback for the New York Giants. Started, I think, 13, 14 games for them a few years ago. So you know he's athletic. He can play all over the place. Seeing him out there just doing it all, kind of, I have dubbed him the human Swiss Army knife because of it. And he was great out there. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't even know we had him on the team. And then he comes out and he makes these plays. So good on him for, I believe, in his first game, right, Josh?
I want to say he played on Labor Day, but this is either his first or second game. This was the first game where he really made an impact.
Yeah, we didn't really notice him on Labor Day, or I didn't anyways. So yeah, there was tons of great performances by this defense, which is, we all know how the defense has performed this year, and They were really great. I mean, Emmanuel Davis was out there making plays. Everybody was contributing, it seemed, to stop this Red Blacks offense. So I'm really happy with them this game.
Yeah, you brought up Whitlock. He had the big sack on the last play of the game. Justin Vaughn's another defensive lineman. The rookie out of Fordham, the Hamilton boy, who went to Sir Alan McNabb, had his first career sack against Ottawa on their second-to-last drive, forced the Red Blacks to punt. He's a kid who was drafted in the fifth round this year, probably wasn't expected to see a bunch of action, but with Michael Atkinson and Ted Laurent down, he's been forced to see a lot more playing time than I think anyone thought. And week in, week out, he's one of those guys. He's proving he belongs in this league, and I thought that was good to see him get his first sack, and it was a big one. It didn't end the game, but it certainly helped seal the victory for the Ticats.
Yeah, it put them in a real bad situation, and second and long or third and long, it was we just didn't see those plays happening earlier in the season. And then all of a sudden now we're seeing key plays happen at key moments to, seal victories. So that's spectacular.
Yeah. It's the winning is contagious sort of attitude of when good things are happening, everyone's playing a little bit better and the breaks kind of go your way. You're getting pressure, you're beating your man. And it works. Another guy I want to talk about, Richard Leonard. We talk about this guy almost every week, but he is turning into a lockdown DB out there. He was only credited with one tackle and one pass knockdown in this game, but his impact, I think, goes beyond the stats. He was fantastic. He's been fantastic all year. And I also want to talk about the whole secondary because I think that this was by far the best game the secondary has played all year. Ottawa's longest play from scrimmage was 37 yards, and the defense and the secondary had a lot to do with this. Limited Ottawa's yards after catch to just 55 on the game. You mentioned it earlier, the secondary's coming together, the line's coming together. It feels like this is a team. Like they're playing what Jeff Reinbold told us all those years ago, complementary football. Special teams makes a good play, or the offense makes a good play, and the defense makes a good play to set up the offense and fight. Like, that's what we saw in this game. And yes, it wasn't sustained over a full 60 minutes, but I think that the defense, more than anything in this game, set the tone. And I think they're the ones who, when you really look at this game, go, this is the defense that we need to see in Hamilton. This is the defense we want to see in Hamilton. And the defense sort of, they held their own. I don't want to say they won the game because that's not fair, but when the going got tough and Ottawa started chipping away at the lead, the defense made plays. They made stops. They didn't give up those big second down completions. They found a way to hunker down and make plays and win this football game.
Yeah, and they did give up a touchdown in the second half that made it close. Drew Tate to Stangby, I believe. But it's hard for them to perform so highly when the offense just isn't performing at all. I mean, so many two and outs and just bad play in the second half by the offense really probably made the defense really tired. And it probably made it really hard on them. So, yes, they gave up some points in the second half, but they made the plays when they needed to at the end of that game. So
and that just did too. I didn't fear that when Ottawa got the ball at the end of the game with a minute or so left, I wasn't sitting there going, they're going to drive and win this game. I didn't have that fear in my heart because of how this defense had played throughout the game. Just on, like I mentioned, Justin Vaughn on the drive previous gets the sack that forces the punt. It's like they were making those drive stopping plays, and I had no doubt in my mind that they were going to stop Ottawa and they were going to win this football game. And Whitlock, who we mentioned, he gets the big sack on second down, forces him into a third and really long. The DB shut everything down, forces Drew Tate, who's in the game for Trevor Harris, to throw short, and then Ticats come up, swarm, and get the tackle to seal the game. It was just an overall great effort. And before we move on to special teams and player of the week, I would be remiss if we didn't mention Larry Dean. He has clearly been the heart and soul of this defense all season. Simone Lawrence is the guy that we always attribute. He's the leader of this team. But Dean's been the quiet leader. He's been the one that week in, week out has probably played the best of any player on this team. He had another great game against Ottawa. Talked about the big play to open the game already, but he had eight tackles, one for a loss, and just seemed to be a nuisance for the Red Blacks offense. And he's been a nuisance for offenses all season, and he's really started to come on these last few weeks especially and really make big plays. And Larry Dean's a guy that I don't think a lot of people league-wide talk about, so I think we need to talk about him a little bit more. To pump his tires as Ticat fans, because this is a guy come all-star picking season who might get overlooked because he's not a big name, but he is having an all-star caliber season.
Yeah, he's definitely been the best linebacker on this team the whole season. So, yeah, good call calling him out and giving him some credit. Now, there's just one last thing I want to touch on was there was a 2nd and 20 play where they gave up a first down, which has, you know, been their calling card, which kind of upset me. But I can let it slide since we did get the victory. But I just wanted to mention it.
No. It was a catch to a throw to Ellingson, I believe. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think they made a big play on first down to put him into 2nd and 20, and then they gave it up. I remember it. But it's one of those things, and I'm glad you mentioned it. That was an anomaly in this game. That used to be the norm, and that's when it would really tick you off. It's going to happen. I'm sure the Ticats picked up a couple 2nd and 7 plus plays too. So. It doesn't bother me as much because the defense played so well. You're going to give up a big play here and there, and that happens. But no, it definitely deserves a shout out because if they can never give those up, this team's going to win a lot of football games going down the stretch here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now I guess we can move on to special teams. I just wanted to compare the two kickers in this in this game.
The kicking
especially
battle,
field goals.
Bring it on. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, Castillo 4 for 4. Brett Maher, 2 for 4, with a couple of key misses that, you know, did damage to the Red Blacks. So it was a good night for Castillo, not a good night for Brett Maher.
Well, he left 4 points on the board, and Ottawa lost by 4. And I know he makes those kicks, and the game plays out differently and what have you, but it's hard not to look at the final score and see what he did and go, Castillo won this battle, the battle between the former kicker and the current kicker, and we talked all offseason about, man, the kicking game. I think Castillo's missed twice on the season, and I don't know. He was pretty clutch in this one, kicking 4 field goals. So it looks to me like the Ticats made the right call.
They did. I know I was pretty worried about it at the start of the season, but he's been great all year. So, and a bit of the return game with Alpin back there. Not a spectacular game by him, but the one thing I like about him is he doesn't really dance around. He just kind of goes. He sees a hole, and he just goes straight forward and gets the yards that he can. So he had 7 punt returns for 80 yards, 11.4-yard average, a long of 20, and kickoff returns 3 for 55 yards, an 18.3-yard average, a long of 26. So not incredible numbers, but I like the way he plays, and I think, you know, in the future games we could see him do better in the return game.
Yeah, I was – impressed is probably not the right word, but you're right. He was very steady. Very, he didn't do, you're right, he didn't dance around. He took the ball, looked where he wanted to go, and went there. And yeah, it doesn't produce gaudy numbers, but he didn't produce any terrible ones either. And it's interesting as we transition more into Brandon Banks being a wide receiver, and we look at guys that maybe could replace him on special teams. Altman looked again. Didn't look like he's going to be a game breaker back there, but he looks like he's going to be able to at least keep this afloat until maybe they find someone who is quicker. And there's actually, when we get to the news in a little bit, there's a guy that Ticats signed during the week that could be the next Brandon Banks if he's given a shot. But we'll get to that in a second. Before we finish this game, Mike, it is your week to pick our glorious player of the week. Who are you taking this week?
Well, unlike most weeks, there is a couple options here, but I'm going to have to go with C.J. Gable just because on this show for so long we've been talking about give C.J. Gable the ball, and that's exactly what they did in this game. 11 carries for 74 yards, 2 touchdowns. The guy was running with passion. It looked like he had something to prove, and he proved it. He also had 3 catches for 28 yards, 9.3 yard average. So this guy, it looks like he's back, and he is well deserved of the player of the game this week.
If it was my pick, Mike, I would pick the exact same guy. There were a lot of guys to pick. You're right. For the first time, maybe all season, we had a lot of guys to go through to pick this, but I couldn't agree with you more. Gable was the catalyst for this team on offense. He would look so effortless out there running. He was running with a purpose. He was running with strength. He was running with speed and power. He was involved in the game plan. And when you get C.J. Gable involved in the game plan, the offense is that much better for it. So I could not in any way endorse more C.J. Gable as the player of the week for this game against Ottawa. Now let's get on to some news. The Ticats made a ton of roster moves over the last week. This time, though, less because they need to shuffle out underperforming players, and more just because they dealt a boatload of injuries after the Labor Day Classic. So they signed 6 players, including 5 Canadians, national defensive lineman Ben Daguiar, who I think people will remember was a second-round pick for Calgary Stampeders in 2013. He's a local boy. He went to McMaster, and he went to Barton Secondary School. Boo Barton, go Sherwood. And he appeared in 53 games with the Stampeders, registering 5 defensive tackles, 36 special teams tackles, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. They signed linebacker Frank Reynaud, who was an 8th-round pick of the Bombers in 2016 and played with them until he was released in September. Another national linebacker in Akeem Wunder, who spent time with Winnipeg, Toronto, and Calgary. They brought back defensive back Tristan Dauphlin, who was with the Cats in training camp and was on their practice roster for a couple of weeks earlier this season. They signed national wide receiver Mitchell Baines, who spent training camp with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. He's a University of Ottawa product, but he was released on June 15th, and he actually got some playing time in this last game after having only practiced with the team for 2 days after Felix Faubert-Lucier got hurt in that one. And then last but certainly not least, they signed international wide receiver Willie Quinn. He has spent time with the New York Jets and the Chicago Bears in minicamp this year. He went to Southern University, which is the same school that Mike Jones went to. And the big thing about this guy, he's 5'5". He is a speedster. He had 10 return touchdowns in college. And when I mentioned earlier when we were talking about special teams, that we're talking about a guy that could replace Brandon Banks, I'm talking Willie Quinn. This guy is a speed demon. He's small. He probably reminds a lot of people of Brandon Banks. This could be the kick and punt returner of the future for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So now that I got all that out, Mike, what do you think of all these moves?
Well, I think that I don't know much about a lot of these players. That's what I think, but I'm not going to lie to you. I know of Ben Daguiar, and that's about it. So obviously, we've been hit hard ratio-wise, a lot of Canadians going down, and we need to bring in some talent. And maybe in that talent, there's one or two players that will be future starters or future backups for this team. So, yeah, I just, I don't have much knowledge on these players, but I just hope for the best.
Yeah, so the reason they had to sign all these guys, as I mentioned, they got hit with a ton of injuries. They placed 4 players on the 6-game injured list. 3 of them were Canadians, receiver Giovanni Aprile and running backs Mercer Timmis and Sean Thomas Erlington, all Canadians, all placed on the 6-game injured list. They also placed linebacker / defensive back Dominique Ellis on the 6-game injured list. So that's 2 starters in Aprile and Ellis, a solid backup in Timmis, and a good special teams player in Erlington. That is what necessitated all these moves. So, yeah, we don't know a ton, about these guys. I expect Ben Diagiar to play a lot on special teams. I said maybe some of the other guys will get some game action. We said Bane's got some, but these are mostly going to be special teams players, especially with the guys we lost. But if you want to know why the Ticats went out and signed a bunch of Canadians off the street, it's because they absolutely had to, because they got absolutely decimated after the game with the Argos.
Yeah, and hopefully we're getting some of our key Canadian starters back in the lineup relatively soon. It's hard to tell with all the secrecy around injuries with the Ticats organization, but it'd be nice to get Big Teddy back, and we know that Fantuse is close to returning. So those are two guys that would really help the team overall and just the ratio in general.
Oh, look at you setting things up for the next topic of conversation. It is Andy Fantuse, Mike. I knew you knew what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like – actually, it's funny. I didn't see the story. I saw your tweet first about it where you said something like Andy Fantuse is going to be back in a week or two. That's pretty cool. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? What inside information does Mike have? Because it was in the middle of the day. I was like, he's probably at work. There's no way he's drunk. What's going on here? Then I scrolled and found the stuff. It looks like – looks like we're going to be getting the future Hall of Famer back pretty soon, which is I think they're going to be a huge shot in the arm for this offense and for the team in general, because this guy's a leader on this team, and we just talked about all the injuries to Canadians that they suffered over the past couple of weeks, so this would be great. We actually had a question about whether Fantuse should come back from one of our listeners, Gregory. He sent us in a question last week, and we were going to get to it last week, but we ran a little long in talking about mostly talking about the Labor Day win because we were so ecstatic that they won. We spent like 40 minutes talking about it. We were going to push that question to this week, so we're not going to talk about it now because the question was basically, do you see Fantuse coming back and or do you wait and see if it would like give him a year off and let him come back next year? That's kind of a moot point now because it looks like Tuz is heading back to the Ticats sometime in the next couple of weeks, and man, adding him to this offense could just make things a lot more interesting here in Tigertown.
Yeah, and it's a lot sooner than I thought he would be coming back. And I don't have a problem with it. As long as he is, you know, healthy and he's ready to go, I don't have a problem with him coming back earlier. Because you're right, he's going to help this team quite a bit. We have a lot of receivers that have speed. We don't have a lot of receivers that are a Fantuse-type player, you know, a possession-type receiver who can get those second and seven, second and eight, second and long plays, make the catch, and just, you know, barrel forward for a first down. And he brings that element to this team. And before he got injured last year, he was on fire. He could have been the most outstanding Canadian if he would have stayed healthy. So getting him back, if he is similar player to what he was before the injury, is huge for this team.
Absolutely. And you know what else he provides to this team? Height. This receiving core lacks height, and Andy Fantuse is 6'3", 6'4". That's a big target for Jeremiah Mazzoli to be thrown to, and that, like you said, that those second down conversions that he is known for. It's great that Luke Tasker can get those, but Luke Tasker is not a big dude. Andy Fantuse is a big dude. That's a big target. He is dependable. It adds another dimension to this offense, and it's funny. Years ago, I remember we were talking about the Ticats had too much size, and now we're talking about, man, they need some more size. So getting Andy Fantuse back and getting those big mitts and those dependable hands for those second and five conversions going to make this offense just a lot that much more better.
Yes, and it's
more better. That was terrible. More better. Oh, geez. I cringe just saying
much
that.
Much more gooder. But he adds an element to the red zone offense as well. So I think that he can help out this team in so many different ways. I hope he's back next week. If he's not, that's fine. But he'll be back soon, and he will be doing good things on the field, I'm convinced.
Yeah, I can't imagine he's going to play against the Riders. He might not play against BC. I hear a couple of weeks. I'm circling that September 30th date with the Argos here at Tim Hortons Field for his return. I think that could be the day that'll be about 11 months after he was injured. That's a pretty good timetable for a return. So looking at that, thinking he comes back then, he comes back for the last five or so games of the season, helps maybe push this team into the playoffs, healthy going into the playoffs for the first time. I'm very excited, if you can't tell.
Yeah. I'm with you, buddy.
All right, let's talk some CFL news. There's not a whole lot to talk about, but there is some interesting stuff. We've seen a couple players. The NFL obviously kicked off this past weekend, and after training camps there ended, we saw some of the players that left the CFL in the offseason to give the NFL a shot get cut. So we've seen a couple of players trickle back north. Two of those players both signed, interesting enough, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. and are now back in the CFL. I'm talking about wide receiver Darrell Walker and linebacker Jeff Knox Jr. They both went back to their old teams as well. Walker signed back with the Eskimos and Knox signed with the Rough Riders. And Walker actually played this past Saturday. And you were there at Commonwealth, so maybe you can bring some first-hand, first-sight insight into this. But what I saw, he had a pretty darn good game for his first game back. 8 catches, 93 yards, and looked every bit as explosive as he did his two previous campaigns at Edmonton. And what did you see from him when you were at the game?
Well, he didn't get much attention early on, but then he got the sweep play where he got the handoff right near the end zone and made a couple tacklers miss, and he snuck into the end zone. The crowd went wild because that was his first touch of the game, I believe. So, yeah, this guy looks like he hasn't missed a beat, almost 90 yards receiving, and he just looked like he hadn't been in the NFL, you know, training camps for however long. He looked like he'd been with this team all season long, and he adds so much to this team. I mean, there were already a pretty good receiving corps, and now you add him, an all-star player, a CFL all-star player like that, he's going to help out this offense tremendously. So he was great.
Yeah, he's also only signed for the remainder of the season, so he's likely leaving that NFL option open after this season. And I got to think, I know he's still a young player, but you think if he tries again doesn't materialize, he's probably heading back to the CFL for good. And then, of course, Jeff Knox signed with Saskatchewan just earlier today. And I wonder if he'll be back in action when the Riders head here to play the Ticats on Friday. That'd be a big shot in the arm for that defense, which is playing pretty well right now.
Yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't be. I mean, he's probably from the same defense, so he comes in and he'll probably be like Darrell Walker and start his first game very quickly.
Yeah, be a big headache for the Ticats offense because Knox is a very, very talented player. And I just want to make everyone, we talk about these guys coming back to the CFL and we get happy because, hey, these are some great players that come back. But anytime a CFL player goes down to the NFL, I always root for them to make it there, make the big bucks, and have a long, very successful career in the National Football League. But I'm never mad when these players, the caliber of Walker and Knox, come back to the CFL because they add so much talent to this league. But obviously, they didn't make it down south, and that's not a knock on them. There's a lot of great players that have tried and failed to make the NFL, and if they do give it a shot again, I hope they do make it. But for the time being, they're back in the CFL, and I'll be happy to watch them play.
And some of the times, it's not how good of a player you are. It's more of a politics thing. Now, I'm not saying that happens all the time, but it's funny how people that go down, the players that go down south, the high, you know, Darrell Walkers of the world, or the people that you expect to make the team don't make the team, and then sometimes players that you don't expect to make an NFL squad make an NFL squad. So it's a bit of a crapshoot, and there's many different things that come into factor when making an NFL team.
Absolutely there is. So CFL Week 2018 has been announced, the host city, and it's going to be Winnipeg. Obviously, they held the 2017 edition of this in Regina, and it was a huge success. And I will admit that I'm a little bummed that it's not here in Hamilton. I thought the event coming here would be a great sort of test event to see if the city could host a Grey Cup. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's bad that it's in Winnipeg. Winnipeg's a great football city, so it deserves to be there. I'm just glad the league was smart enough not to listen to all those people who said, you got to keep it in Regina for 3 or 4 years and really let this thing grow. And obviously, they said nuts to that, and they moved it to Winnipeg, and that's good. Because, again, I understand Regina's football mad, Saskatchewan's football mad, but you got to move this thing around the country and get all fans of all teams engaged in this. And last year's event, obviously a huge success, and I think this year's event would have been a huge success if it returned to Regina, but I'm glad that the league has agreed, at least by moving it to Winnipeg, they need to see if this is a viable marquee event outside of Regina and see if this is going to last, if it's going to be one of those things that maybe because it was a first in Regina that, oh, everyone was excited for it, or if this can be something that they can do all around the country and be successful every year.
Yeah, I like the decision to go to a different market. Winnipeg's a great football city, as you said, and I think they'll support it well. So, you know, I thought that one of Jeffrey Orge's good things that he brought to the league was this CFL week. Now, it might not have been all his idea, obviously, but he was in charge at the time, and I will give him credit for that. So, yeah, I'll take it to Winnipeg this year. I'm sure it'll be a success, and maybe bring it further east in the next season to Hamilton, because I think that Hamilton would support this. I think that Hamilton is a great football city and would come out and do a great job of putting it together and supporting it.
I think so, too. I think this community is starved for a big CFL event, and I think something like CFL Week would be a great appetizer for getting a Grey Cup here eventually. So the last bit.
What about an East Final this year? That's a big CFL event. How about that? East Final
Hamilton. I'm not going that far yet, sir.
Okay. Yeah.
The last bit of news we have to talk about is, to me, nothing very big, but it came up. I saw it. Justin Dunk of Freedown Nation is the first to break the news. The CFL is going to probably be experimenting with different balls. And I know that that's a loaded thing to say, but they're going to be experimenting with different footballs probably as soon as next season. They're basically, what's going to happen is they're going to use footballs that are the same size as NFL balls. And in the article by Dunk on 3Dynation, you can read it. He talks about how quarterbacks, receivers, and kickers especially have all said they would prefer to have NFL-sized balls, that they think it would make them play better, throw better, all that sorts of stuff. If that's the case, I'm 100% for it. I don't think anyone fan-wise is going to notice this. But you brought up Jeffrey Orange. I can only imagine the outcry if this would have happened under Orange's watch. But this is right. Going to piss a lot of people off. And this is just going to be further proof and further evidence that CFL fans just like to be angry about stuff, right?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. It doesn't make one bit of difference to me if it's going to make quarterbacks happier and the receivers happier and the kickers and the punters. Then I'm all for it. If it's going to make these players perform better, I'm all for it. So it's a non-factor to me. It's a story, and I'm glad we're talking about it. But you're right. There are going to be a lot of angry fans, and I am not one of them.
It doesn't matter. You're not. Yeah. If anything, the players want this change. If it makes them play better, then we're going to get more exciting football. And isn't that what we all want?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's move on now to my favorite segment. Bozo of the week. Mike, you have your bozo, but before we get to that, I'd like to give an honorable mention bozo, and this one goes to a former bozo of this show, Mr. Rod Peterson, the quote-unquote voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. This whole loudest fan thing that took place on TSN between the Sunday game, the not Labor Day classic between the Bombers and the Riders, and then the Banjo Bowl this past weekend. They had this thing where they were going to gauge how loud each fan base was, and they had a giant sound measuring thingamajabber on the screen, and it took up like a third of the screen. It was ridiculous, and this whole thing to me is ridiculous, but leave it to Rod Peterson to make it even more ridiculous. He came out and said, and I quote, "I will not acknowledge the results of this ridiculous contest because the Rider fans didn't know about this. They didn't know what they were going to be measuring and when they were going to be measuring." And it was a silly marketing gimmick. It was a way to get fans involved. It's completely meaningless. It's not like the Winnipeg Blue Bombers get two extra wins in the standings because they're now technically the loudest fans in the CFL. But just like it was dumb to begin with. And then you get this fool coming out here and saying this idiotic stuff. Like, just leave it alone, man. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. This is the new balls of fan competitions. It just, who gives a crap? You're out here saying, "I will not acknowledge the results." What are you doing? Why does that? Shut up. Stop talking. I know he's a homer. I know he's basically a troll with a press pass. But just be better. Just be better. Like, this is just so stupid.
Yeah, it is a bit idiotic, and I was thinking about it, and, you know, what if the Winnipeg game was a blowout and the crowd was quieter than usual? There's so many different variations, different things that could happen during the game that could throw off this, bragging rights test or whatever it is. So it's just a bit silly, and Rod's comments were ridiculous as well, so... An honorable mention for Bozo of the Week has to go to Rod, and I applaud your pick, Josh.
All right, so Mike, let's get to the official Bozo of the Week for this week. Mike, let us know who you got.
Well, I got Jason Moss for his temper tantrums on the sidelines last game. The one he threw his headset and he was just throwing a fit. It must have been a little bit embarrassing for Eskimos fans, even if it was justified, even if he did have the right to be upset. You have to be more professional than that. You have to conduct yourself in a more professional manner, and he did not. And it continued in the after-game interviews where he went off with the reporters. So my bozo of the week has to go to Jason Moss this week.
Yeah, he's been pretty fiery on the sidelines as a head coach and as an offensive coordinator. And I actually saw some Red Blacks fans point out after he had his little meltdown there, his temper tantrum, like a three-year-old who didn't have his nap. I saw some Red Blacks fans saying, was he like this when he was the offensive coordinator in Ottawa? And it's like, yeah, he was. I remember the time that I think it was Jamal Westerman hit Henry Burris low and Brian Chu had to like restrain Jason Moss from going on the field to like fight Jamal Westerman or something. Like, he just looked like a complete tool. And it was actually at that point that I kind of sort of started turning on the Red Blacks, because it's just, you look like a fool and you're just carrying yourself like a complete idiot. And he's taken that into his head coaching career, and he's been a fairly successful head coach, but man, people used to give Ken Austin crap for his sideline explosions, and I never saw Ken Austin throw his headset and throw a temper tantrum like that.
Well, we have seen him bump into players and
We saw him be
referees.
Don't get me wrong, he had his problems on the sideline, but he never. Right. I never saw him melt down like that. That was completely unprofessional.
Yeah, absolutely. So another bozo handed out. Two bozos this week, and both well deserving, in my opinion.
All right, Mike, enough with the bozos. Let's talk football again. Let's preview this upcoming game. Who would have thought this game would have so much at stake just a few weeks ago, eh? The Ticats host the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who are winners of three of their last four, this Friday at Tim Hortons Field. This is a pretty big game for both teams.
Absolutely, with Saskatchewan being in that race in the West, a very tight race, and Hamilton coming in on a two-game winning streak, looking to tighten the race in the East. I think it's going to be a good game, and should be very interesting to see what happens in this one.
Yeah, Tim Hortons Field has not been very kind to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They've made three visits here. They're 0-3, and they've lost those three games by a combined score of 111-25. Now, obviously, this Riders team that comes in this game is – the Ticats have played the Riders in these games since the Riders have been bad. These three games took place over the course of Saskatchewan being the worst team in the CFL. And now they come in here fairly hot. Yeah, they got beat down a bit by Winnipeg in the Banjo Bowl, but they come into this game looking pretty, pretty good. And I think this is going to be a much different outcome. I think it's going to be a lot closer game than the previous ones have been. But the big question mark coming into this game, obviously, is the status of Kevin Glenn. Glenn left the Banjo Bowl with a hand injury late in the third quarter and did not return. And Glenn has been playing lights out this year. I think anyone out there would tell you he is the MOP for them so far this season, and losing him would be a big blow.
Yeah, it would be. I'm not super high on Brandon Bridge. I think that if Brandon Bridge is the quarterback for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, the Hamilton Tigercats will win this game.
Yeah, so that's just it. If Kevin Glenn does miss this game, and I just saw reports that Glenn is at practice, but he didn't have his helmet on, and Bridge was taking most of the first team reps, so that probably tells you where the Riders could be leaning. It's weird to me, because I look at that, okay, if Bridge starts or if Glenn starts, like, this could be a good thing or a bad thing for Hamilton. Like, Bridge is obviously a way more athletic quarterback than Glenn. He can run around, he can make plays with his feet, and that could pose an issue for the Ticats defense, but on the same side, Bridge is, you know, obviously nowhere near as polished a player as Glenn, and this would be his first start of the year, and it comes on the road, and he could get flustered, and the Riders are better with Glenn under center, but I'm not sure if Bridge out there, he provides sort of that X factor. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for the Ticats. I'd like their chances more if Brandon Bridge plays, but he's kind of a bit of an unknown.
He is. I don't know what it is, but maybe it's his throwing motion. It's just very odd to me. I don't have much confidence in him as a passer. I think he will throw a couple of picks if he plays, so that could be a big advantage for the Tiger Cats. But we'll see. You just never know how a player might perform, especially when he's given a shot to start. So this might be his his chance to really show that he can be a starter in this league, and that could be bad for the Tiger Cats. So you never know.
That's just it. He's a wild card. Like I said, I just don't know what to expect because there's not a lot of film on him. I think he had one start with the Alouettes in the last game of the 2015 season when he was still there. He's played sparingly. He came into a game when the Riders were trailing big late against BC a few weeks ago. But we haven't seen what he is when the game plan is focused around him, what he does for a full 60 minutes outside of the preseason. Like it's an X factor. It's an unknown, and I hate unknown quantities, but I think the Ticats' chances are much, much better with Brandon Brake because you can force young quarterbacks into making mistakes. Kevin Glenn has not been making those typical Kevin Glenn mistakes. So obviously the Riders aren't as good with Glenn not out there, but this one worries me just because you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And offensively, there's not much that I really have to say or what they have to do, but Mazzoli needs to be more consistent. He has to put four quarters together and, move this ball and score points in every single quarter. And also keep handing the ball to C.J. Gable. Keep him involved in the game, whether it's rushing the ball or through the air with screen passes or swing passes or whatever it is, because the more you have him involved, the better the team's going to perform offensively.
Yeah, defensively, I'm kind of the same way. Just do what you did against Ottawa. If Glenn plays, you got to make sure he doesn't get into a rhythm, because if he gets onto a hot streak, if he gets a hot hand, he is among the most dangerous quarterbacks in this league. And if Briggs plays, you kind of got to remind him that this isn't college, and all that running around could get you hurt. And I'm looking at big number zero, the man I'm going to call Killa from now on, Davin Coleman. I'm looking right in your direction. If Brandon Briggs starts running around there like he's playing sandlot ball, Coleman's got to put his shoulder right in his chest and bury him.
Absolutely. Another clean hit from him is a good thing. And like you said earlier, like we were talking about, he's been laying out the quarterbacks all season long, and not one of them has been a dirty hit. So he's just been a great player.
Absolutely. One last thing about this game before we move on. This game is the annual Hall of Fame game. And boy, oh boy, is this one hell of a Hall of Fame class. I know we talked about this a lot earlier in the year, but it bears repeating. Anthony Calvillo, G. Roy Simon, Mike O'Shea, Kelvin Anderson, Stan Schwartz, and Brian Torres are all being inducted. That's a hell of a class. Those are some of the greatest players to ever play the game. And kind of it's funny, we're now seeing guys going to the Hall of Fame that played during our youth and our sort of formative years watching this game and really getting into it. These are all players that the four players, Calvillo, Simon, O'Shea, and Anderson, are all guys that played in the late 90s, early 2000s, and some even into the late 2000s. All great players. But the one thing out of this is I'm wondering is when Mike O'Shea gets introduced, and I don't know if he's going to be here. The Bombers are on a bye, so maybe he'll be in town for this. But if he is and he gets introduced, I wonder if the fans are going to boo him.
That's a good question. I hope they don't. I mean, I held a grudge against O'Shea for the longest time, and it's not deserving anymore. I mean, that was years and years ago. He's not even a player anymore. I don't have any ill will towards him anymore. So I hope the fans don't boo him. It's his Hall of Fame. You know, he should be recognized as the great player that he was, and he should be applauded, not booed.
Well, I think every Ticat fan knows that he's a great player or was a great player, and I think that's what pissed him off so much. Because if he left and he was just average, then no one would care. I think he is going to get booed, and I honestly think if he does, I think social media will lighting into us Ticat fans for booing him. But I also think O'Shea is going to laugh at it. I think you're going to see a smirk on his face because I think he knows it's coming. And every time I've heard him talked about when it comes to coming back to Hamilton, he's always been very jokey about it. Like he understands, he's talking about how batteries thrown at him. And I want to say he said he had a cup of piss thrown at him or something too. I could just make that up, but I definitely remember the batteries thing. But he talks about this stuff. And he does it tongue-in-cheek, and he does it with a laugh and a smile, and, he gets it. And maybe this would be one of those things where the fans would boo as, a sign of respect, because it's you're O'Shea and we have to boo you sort of thing. But I think everyone in the stands is going to recognize and know that Mike O'Shea was an all-time great player and is very deserving of being in the Hall of Fame.
If they do boo him, I hope it's tongue-in-cheek kind of thing.
Yeah, I expect it will. Okay, let's move on to some picks. We got four games this week, Mike. We start off here in the Hammer on Friday night. The Saskatchewan Roughriders travel to the suddenly hot Hamilton Tiger Cats. Boy, does that feel good to say. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
I'm going to keep it rolling. I got to take the Tiger Cats in a close game, but I honestly think they will squeak out this one.
I want to take the Riders simply because I picked against the Ticats the last 2 weeks, and they've won, and I don't mind being the battering ram that takes a beating on his picks if the Ticats keep winning, but I also think that they're going to pull this one out. I think there's something in the air with this team, and I feel like they finally believe in themselves. And I think to make everyone else believe that this team might actually be able to make a run here, they got to beat a Western team. I know Saskatchewan's in fifth, but they're still a good football team. They're a 500 football team. I feel like the Ticats can pull this out. I think this is going to be a whale of a game. I think it's going to be a close one. I think the Ticats pull it out, squeak it out, and get a win by maybe less than a touchdown. Saturday, Mike, doubleheader Saturday. First one's in Toronto. The Edmonton Eskimos, they've lost, what, four straight now? After winning seven in a row, travel to take on the Toronto Argonauts, who got beat up on Labor Day, then had a week off. Mike, who do you got in this one?
The Eskimos are on a bad slide, and it's a tough one to pick, but I'm going to have to go with the Eskimos just because Toronto has just looked so bad against Western teams this season, and I just don't see them putting it together in this one. I'm going to have to go with the Eskimos.
Yeah, in almost all scenarios, when it's East versus West, I'm taking the West. I'm taking them in this one, too. The Eskimos end their four-game slide with getting a very decisive win against the Argos. But the only thing that gives me pause is the Argos are coming off a bye, and Mark Trestman, with a couple weeks to game plan for a team, could do some crazy things. It's in Toronto. I wouldn't be shocked if the Argos wins, but I got to go with the Eskimos. I just think they're the more talented team. The second game of a Saturday doubleheader is a big Western tilt. A couple heavyweights here, although I guess Calgary's more of a super heavyweight at this point. BC travels to McMahon to take on the Stamps. Mike, tell me why you're taking BC to break the McMahon streak there.
I can't take BC. Calgary's just they're in a league of their own right now, in my opinion. They're just too good, and they're too good at home, and BC's kind of wavering. Gonna have to go with Calgary.
Calgary did not play great against the Eskimos, but they did enough to win.
And that's it. They always do. It's like they just find a way. And that's, I don't know. They're just going to keep doing that.
It's at McMahon. I'm taking the Stamps. Until someone beats Calgary in Calgary, I'm not picking against Calgary in Calgary. Last game of the week, Sunday afternoon in La Belle Provence, we have the Ottawa Redblacks taking on the struggling Montreal Alouettes. Mike, who do you like in this one?
Grant's just been terrible lately. He did play better in the second half this week, but he's just, I don't know, man. Like, it just seems he throws in the dirt so much, and he's just not been playing well. So I have to take the Red Blacks after a loss to the Tiger Cats, going to come in and put a whooping on the Alouettes.
If the Red Blacks were at full health and Trevor Harris was behind center, this would be a no-brainer. But it's Drew Tate, and I'm going to go with the upset here. I'm going to take Montreal to beat Ottawa. I just don't have any faith in Drew Tate. I know Durant's looked bad. Montreal as a whole has looked bad. But it's Drew Tate, man. And 5-6 years ago, I was on the Drew Tate bandwagon, and then those 5 years went really quickly. And now all of a sudden, he's a backup quarterback, and I feel like he's going to make some boneheaded plays. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Alouettes in this one.
That's fair enough.
All right, let's get to some questions, Mike. We got two this week. One came in the Three Down Nation comment section and took a little umbrage with you and I discussing the possibility of the team trading Brandon Banks. And it was a very long-winded comment, for which I appreciate, but I'm not going to read the whole thing here. But commenter Broccoli, which, great name, by the way, basically boiled down his question to this. At what point do we look at the blockers in front of the return man instead of just blaming everything on the return man himself? So basically, he's saying that the blocking in front of Banks was garbage, and that's why he wasn't playing well. What do you think about that comment?
Well, I think we've mentioned the blocking on several occasions with Banks, and I think it's a combination of both. I think Banks doesn't have as much confidence as he once did, and he's not hitting the holes as well as he used to. And I think that the blocking in front of him isn't as great as it used to be back when he was on the regular returning long returns and touchdowns. So I think it's a combination of both. I know that's kind of me not really answering the question, but I believe that it's a bit of both.
No, I agree with you. I believe we have given our fair share of blame to the blockers. And I also think we were onto something with Banks having lost a step, because A, he said so himself, in an interview with Drew Edwards last week, he said he has lost a step because he's getting older, and B, the team has replaced him as their kick and punt returner. And obviously, and maybe we weren't very forceful with this, but we don't put all the blame on Speedy B for the woes that he had in the return game. And I don't even think I'd put the majority of the blame on him. I think it does go to the blockers. But the fact of the matter is, he is almost 30, and I think returning is a young man's game. And if he ever returns to special teams, I'll be happy if he does. But I don't think transitioning to a receiver role full-time is a bad thing. And yeah, the blocking hasn't been great, but we saw Damar Altman again in this last game not break anything big, but he didn't take those big lost yardages either. So yeah, blocking definitely played a role in the problems that Banks had back there. But Banks is starting to decline, and I don't mean that in a way to demean him, because he said it himself that he's not as fast as he was 3 years ago, because that's just age catching up to you.
And he might be declining in the return game, but he could be on the upswing in his receiving. So, you know, we could be leaving one thing behind and graduating into another thing that gives him actually more responsibilities, and he could contribute more to this team as a receiver. So it could be a good thing.
He's not the first return man to get transitioned out of special teams into offense. You brought up the Chad Owens of it all. Earl Winfield was a dynamic special teams player who transitioned into a full-time role as a receiver. Chris Williams is statistically the best return man for a single season in the history of the Canadian Football League. And now you barely see him on returns, but he is an awesome receiver. We could see the same thing with Brandon Banks. And if he adds that deep dimension, that deep play ability to this offense, I think that makes the team better than him just being out there on specials.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Okay, so we have one more question. Adam, who's always up with some great questions, sent us one in, basically asking, who are your Ticats midseason award winners? Let's just go through this one by one. We'll start with most outstanding special teams player. Mike, who you got?
You got to go Sergio. I mean, the guy has been lights out all season long making field goals. So yeah, I think it's... you know, I don't think you're going to give a different answer.
I'm not. They don't really have a return man who's breaking anything. It's tough to give it to anyone who's not either a return man or a kicker, although Mark Beswick 1 year was the division nominee for most outstanding special teams player, which I thought was great. But no, it's Castillo, bar none. Most outstanding rookie, I think we're probably going to be the same guy on this one, too.
Yeah, Richard Leonard. He has been the bright spot in the secondary all season long. He's been the best player in the secondary all season long, so you got to go with him.
With a tiny honorable mention to Jalen Saunders, who I thought when he came in looked fantastic, it's Richard Leonard. He has started every game in the secondary, and he just gets better week in, week out. He is my no-brainer pick for most outstanding rookie. Most outstanding Canadian, Mike, who do you got here?
I think I got to go with Capicotti. He wasn't starting at the start of the season. Now he is. Even when he wasn't starting, when he got in through rotation, he made plays. So he's been the standout Canadian to me this year.
Oh, this is turning into a really boring segment because I, too, have Justin Capicotti. Not that he hasn't played great, but it's hard to pick a Canadian amongst this group because so many of them have been injured. This team does not have a stud receiving Canadian receiver. Ted Laurent, who is usually a lock for this, is gone. Michael Atkinson, who maybe could have filled in for Laurent and been a candidate, hurt as well. Courtney Steven has had a good season, but he's not been lights out. Craig Butler, we lost a return. Like, all this team star Canadians have gone elsewhere, and Capicotti has played really, really well. I don't think he's division or league award worthy, but he's definitely been the top Canadian on this team. Most outstanding defensive player, Mike, who'd you pick here?
Once again, I think we're going to be picking the same player. I got to go with Larry Dean. He's quietly having a great year. He doesn't get talked about a lot, but he's just standing out in that linebacking corps, and he's playing really well. So I got to go with him.
Once again, we picked the exact same player. I was effusive in my praise of Larry Dean earlier. You want to hear what I think of Larry Dean? Go back earlier in the episode. You can listen to it there. I think he's been the team's best player all season, not just best defensive player. And I think he's having an all-star caliber season. And I agree with you. We don't talk about him enough, and we should. And observers of this league should talk about him more. He has been fantastic. Now the big one. This was probably the hardest one for me to pick, Mike. I'm sure it was the same for you. Who is your MOP for the Ticats at the halfway point of the season?
I'm going with the same player. Now, we usually, you know, usually they're offensive players, and I just couldn't find an offensive player that really stood out that could be the most outstanding player on this team. So I'm going back with Larry Dean again. He's just been the best player on this team all season long.
Same. So we're 5 for 5 with the same picks, but I think that we can chalk that more up to not us always having to agree with one another. And for the record, Adam's picks were all these guys as well. I think it just speaks to, look, this team started 0-8, and you're not going to find a lot of most outstanding players on any side of the ball for Canadians, rookies, special teams, whatever, when your team is 0-8. And it's hard to find a guy. This offense, we've seen two quarterbacks start, and usually quarterback's the way you go for MOP. We've seen guys normally like John Chick, who's no longer on the team, or Ted Laurent, or Simone Lawrence, guys who, those defensive players that maybe could step up and put together a special season. We haven't really seen them play all that much or well or even be on the team anymore. So it was really hard. This team doesn't have a receiver that's really up there in the receiving categories. They finally ran the ball for the first time in forever in this last game, so Gable's kind of off. So it's really hard to right. pick a guy, and I too just went with Dean because, like I said, I think he's been the best player, the most consistent player. And I know it's not most consistent player award, but you got to give it to someone. And I think Dean's been the best player on this team all year. He's consistently performed. So I think that was pretty, it was a pretty easy one when I thought of it, but it was tough just, you know, piling through all the players and trying to find a guy.
Yeah. If this team had to perform better in the first half, I think there would have been some different picks, but like you said, there's just not many options on this team halfway through the season. So we'll pick all the same players, and maybe at the end of the season, though, we'll have some different picks for our year-end awards.
With the team playing well now, things could get a little more interesting in these nomination races going forward. So that's the show, Mike. You can subscribe, everyone out there, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or you can head to 3downnation.com and listen to it there. You want to throw us a question on the old Twitter machine, you can do so. Mike, what is your Twitter handle for everyone, please?
Mike_Ticats.
And you can always hit me up at JoshSmith_82. Or you can be like Broccoli, which again, great freaking name. Or Adam, great freaking contributor. And post those questions in the comments on 3downnation.com. That was episode 87 of Podski Wee Wee, everyone. I'm Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat them raw.
Eat them raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.